purport in which he has explained briefly each of these 20 qualities, and we have discussed so far in the last 3 days the first 4 qualities or 5 qualities up to satyam: intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt, forgiveness, and truthfulness. So now we begin with Damaha. Damaha, which means control of the senses, is linked with the next point, that is Shamaha, control of the mind. So we'll start reading Srila Prabhupada's purport. It's a new paragraph. So please come to the point where Prabhupada has finished talking about truthfulness, and then we start with the discussion on Damaha. Srila Prabhupada's purport, quote, "Control of the senses means that the senses should not be used for unnecessary personal enjoyment. There is no prohibition against meeting the proper needs of the senses, but unnecessary sense enjoyment is detrimental for spiritual advancement. Therefore, the senses should be restrained from unnecessary use." Unquote. So please note, what is Srila Prabhupada prohibiting here? Sense enjoyment? Unnecessary sense enjoyment. So, when Srila Prabhupada says that there is unnecessary sense enjoyment that we should avoid, it automatically means that, what does it mean? When he uses the word unnecessary, what does it also imply? There is something necessary. There is also some necessary sense enjoyment. Now this may sound strange, because we are always hearing that we should avoid sense gratification, right? From the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, that's all we've been hearing when it comes to control of the mind and senses, and we're saying no to sense gratification. And here we're hearing that there's some necessary sense gratification also. What does it mean? It means there are some basic bodily needs which you cannot do without. These are needed for the sake of survival. So sense enjoyment cannot be made zero. Otherwise, you cannot survive in this world. You have to eat something. You have to have some sleep. You have to have some kind of clothing. You have to have some kind of enjoyment in life. But the point Srila Prabhupada is making is that it must be legitimate, necessary sense enjoyment. To accept for the body only that which is necessary to keep the body and soul together. Not more than that. Kamasya nendriya kriti labho jive tayagata jive tatpati kyata nathu yas chinta mahi. So the Bhagavatam says that the goal of human life is to inquire about the absolute truth, tattva jigyasa. It is not for sense gratification. It is not to simply increase the standard of material enjoyment. It is not for fulfillment of kaam or material desires. Rather, human life is meant for something higher. So whatever is necessary for simply keeping body and soul together, that is what we should accept, and that is legitimate, not more than that. And even so, such things should be offered to Krishna and then utilized. And even in the process of enjoyment, we should remember Krishna. When Raghunath Das Goswami lived in Jagannath Puri, he was exhibiting standards of renunciation and austerity that are unthinkable for anybody else, especially in the modern times. Initially he would eat a little something. His father was very wealthy and he would give a lot of money, and with that money he would feed all the devotees and the pilgrims, and he would also partake of that prasadam. Later he stopped doing that. Then he started taking the remnants of whatever the shopkeepers would give of Jagannath prasadam. Then he would stand at the doorstep at the gate of Jagannath temple waiting for people to give alms, and then he would accept whatever came by providence. And when he realized that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't approve of that, then he would go to the place behind Jagannath temple where the cows would ruminate, where they would come at the garbage dump where all the rotten prasadam, the prasadam that had become stale or somehow or the other couldn't be sold, was dumped at the back. And the cows would come there, and whatever the cows couldn't eat, that Raghunath Das Goswami would take, wash it with a little bit of water, and then take that. And as time went on, when he came to Vrindavan, his austerity increased even more. And he would start taking maybe a leaf cup full of buttermilk every day, and then later once in 2 or 3 days, because he would forget to take prasadam for 2 or 3 days at a stretch. And then even when he took that secret bit of buttermilk, he would think, oh, what a wretch I am. I'm doing so much for my sense gratification. I could have been serving Krishna, but here for my own senses, I'm wasting time. So that kind of standard is impossible for us to emulate. We will simply die if we try to imitate Raghunath Das Goswami. But the point is that even when we fulfill our basic bodily needs, we should remember Krishna. What is basic is a subjective thing. What is basic for Bhima was not the same as the basic for Raghunath Das Goswami. But whatever is necessary to keep body and soul together to do our devotional service nicely, that is our standard. And what does it mean by remembering Krishna? That is why we have the Mahaprasadam prayer that we chant every day. And that is why Srila Prabhupada had the system that when prasadam was being honored, and the word used was honored, then someone would read from Krishna book or some such spiritual activity was going on, so that the mind would be focused on Krishna. And then when we were eating Krishna prasadam also, we would remember that this was special, it was Krishna's prasadam. So that's the purpose of saying the Sharira Avidya Jal prayers before, so we remember that this is Krishna's mercy. In order to allow us, to help us to keep body and soul together, He has done this. He has given us this prasadam. So like that, for every basic bodily need that we have, and we should try to reduce it as time goes on, we should remember Krishna. We should see in connection with Krishna and then accept that happily. That is necessary sense enjoyment. But Srila Prabhupada also implies here that it should not be taken in a mood of enjoyment. Yes, the senses get pleasure when you eat wonderful Krishna prasadam, no doubt. But the mood should not be one of enjoyment, of desiring gratification of the senses. The mood is that it is necessary for me to maintain the body and soul together for Krishna's service. And Krishna very kindly has given this, He has made this arrangement, so I am accepting it. Very grateful. Our mood is to give enjoyment to Krishna's senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchyate. This is bhakti. To use the senses in the service of the master of the senses. The senses are called Rishika. And Krishna is Rishikesha. Isha. Isha means the Lord of the senses. So these senses are His property, and therefore they should be used only for His service. not for our pleasure. That's the principle of bhakti, and this is indeed the definition of bhakti. When we live life in this way, accepting things not for our own pleasure, but for Krishna's service, that kind of renunciation is called yukta vairagya. Anasaktasya vishayan yatharam payunjataha nirbandhaha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam chite. So when we accept things not for our gratification, but when we see the connection with Krishna, then that renunciation is called perfect renunciation. Then we are not guilty of the fault of sense gratification. Performing devotional service is the easiest way to control the formidable senses. Otherwise, the senses are very, very impetuous, very strong. It is extremely difficult to control the senses, even for a person who is saintly and who is endeavoring with great determination to control the senses. Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yatato yati kaunteya purushasya vipaschitaha indriyani pramathini haranti prasapam manaha. He says, even a vipaschitaha, a person who is very, very discriminating, very intelligent, who knows truth from falsehood, the distinction, even he, though endeavoring to control his mind and senses, sometimes fails, because the senses are so strong. Indriyani pramathini. The senses are extremely impetuous and strong, and they haranti prasapam manaha, they forcefully prasapam, drag away the mind of such an endeavoring transcendentalist. So then what to speak of those who are not even trying to control the senses? What chance do they have? Even the highly intelligent person finds it difficult. What to speak of those who are not even aware of the importance of controlling the senses? But the senses can be controlled if they are dovetailed in Krishna. And in the next verse there, Krishna says, Tani sarvani sanyamya yukta asi samatparaha vashahi yasyendriyani tasya pragya pratishthita. He says that the senses, if they are restricted and the intelligence and the minds and the senses are focused on Krishna, matparaha, in a devotional spirit, then one is said to be situated in steady intelligence. Tasya pragya pratishthita. Pragya means one's intelligence is stable, it's fixed. In other words, by becoming a devotee of Krishna, one can very easily control the senses. Prabodhananda Saraswati has in his Chaitanya Chandramritam prayers quoted, or rather composed, one very nice verse, the famous verse which Srila Prabhupada quoted many times. Kaivalyam narakayate tridashapur akash pushpayate durdantendriya kala sarpa patali prokhata damstrayate. He says, first of all, that this impersonal Brahman, the aspiration to achieve the impersonal Brahman, to merge into the impersonal, is hellish for a devotee. The devotee doesn't even want to consider such a possibility. Tridashapur akash pushpayate. And even attainment to the heavenly planets is like a phantasmagoria. Akash means sky, pushpa means a flower. So attainment of the heavenly kingdoms and the pleasures obtained therein are like a flower in the sky. Is there any such thing as a flower in the sky? Let's imagine it. There is no such thing. You don't find a flower in the sky. You may find clouds, but you don't find flowers. So it's just a fantasy. It doesn't exist. And then he talks about the situation of the senses of the devotee. Durdanta indriya. Indriya means senses. Durdanta means formidable. The senses are, generally speaking, very, very difficult to control. And they are compared to a poisonous a venomous snake, Kala Sarpapatali, a multitude of such venomous snakes, which bite us and inject poison into us. When a person drinks deadly poison, he dies. His body may get destroyed. But that's just physical poison, rat poison, or whatever it is they take to commit suicide, or arsenic, or whatever it may be. But sense gratification is such a poison, it's worse than the poison used by people to kill other people or to commit suicide. Why? The poison which is used to destroy the body can destroy only one body. Once you die, it's over, then you get a new body. But sense gratification is also called vishaya. Poison in Sanskrit is visha. And sense gratification, the objects of the senses are called vishaya. And they're worse than the sense, the poison of the ordinary poison, because it makes you take body after body and you destroy so many bodies. By taking rat poison or arsenic, you destroy just one body. But by performing sense gratification, you destroy millions of bodies one after the other, repeatedly. It goes on and on and on. So therefore, the senses are considered very dangerous because they are like poisonous serpents. So multitude of poisonous serpents, Kala Sarpa Patali. But when you become a devotee of the Lord, then what happens to these serpents? Prokhata Danshtrayate. It's like a poisonous serpent whose fangs or whose teeth have been removed. So what can such a person, what can such a snake do? A snake cannot bite you. It only looks very deadly. Yes, he's the same snake, very poisonous snake, but he has no power to bite. So for a devotee, the senses do not pose danger, because his senses are completely being used in the service of Krishna. This is the perfection of our senses. And the senses will become tamed, and they will become controlled very easily, because we have submitted those senses to the control of Krishna. Endeavoring transcendentally, try very hard to keep the senses in control. Even on the devotional path, we struggle all the time. How often do we struggle to control our senses? What do you think? How often do we have to struggle? Constantly, right? That is the nature of the conditioned living entity. It's a constant struggle to keep the mind and senses controlled. But in the process of endeavoring for this control, if we depend on the mercy of Krishna, if we take a humble position before Krishna and his devotees and the process of devotional service, and say that, my dear Lord, I have no power to control my senses. Only you, the master of the senses, can control. So please take charge of my senses. And Krishna very mercifully relieves us from the torments of sense desires, of material desires. So it's Krishna's mercy. We are not able to control our senses because of our own sadhana, our own efforts alone. When we start practicing Krishna consciousness, we start chanting the holy name and so on, we experience relief from the torments of the senses. And we think, well, I must be doing something right. I think I'm a pretty good devotee. I'm doing my sadhana right, and I'm strong, I'm very determined, I'm spiritually very intelligent, because now, see, my senses are controlled. And that is the beginning of pride. And the moment we think that I am the cause of my senses being controlled to whatever degree, that is the moment when Krishna may remove his protection. He may remove his mercy, and then we are left. Oh, what happened? What happened to my determination, my discrimination? Just like in the Rasa Leela also, when the gopis were with Krishna, they started feeling proud that Krishna is only with me. Krishna sensed that. and he disappeared from their midst. And then the gopis lamented, oh, what did we do? We made a mistake. So sometimes, after a spell of being able to control the senses suddenly start giving us some trouble to remind us that don't get proud, don't think that you are the cause of your controlling your these senses. These are my senses, Krishna is saying. And I can control them at will. I can have them torment you, or I can have them cooperate with you. You just surrender to me. So the process of devotion service involves surrendering to Krishna, surrendering our mind, our intelligence, our senses to Krishna, to pray to Him, to kindly control our senses. Then we are safe. Then Krishna lifts us out of the whirlpool of sense enjoyment higher and higher and higher towards Goloka Vrindavan. But the moment He sees that we think we are the doer of all the wonderful devotional service we have been doing, of all the books we have been distributing, of all the nice worship we have been doing, and of all the sense control, then all He has to do is just leave us a little bit. We come down again. So the key to success in devotional life is to constantly depend on the mercy of Krishna and His pure devotees. And be completely relying on them for our success. And then of course, because the senses are controlled, are connected with the mind is considered to be the sixth sense, the leader of all the senses. So control of the mind is automatically involved. And that is called Shamaha. And let us see what Srila Prabhupada says about controlling the mind. We'll go on with the purport. Similarly, one should restrain the mind from unnecessary thoughts. That is called Shama. One should not spend one's time pondering over earning money. That is a misuse of the thinking power. The mind should be used to understand the prime necessity of human beings, and that should be presented authoritatively. The power of thought should be developed in association with persons who are authorities in the scriptures, saintly persons and spiritual masters, and those whose thinking is highly developed. So that's interesting. How Srila Prabhupada is describing control of the mind or Shama. The mind, like the senses, is also very difficult to control. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has explained, or rather Arjuna tells Krishna, Chanchalam hi manah Krishna pramathi balavartiram tasyaham nikraham manye vayur eva sudushkaram. He says, my dear Arjuna, in the sixth chapter, while describing the eightfold path of yoga, Ashtanga yoga, mystic yoga, you are explaining so many things that I have to do to control the mind, but it's impossible for me to do all these things because the mind is very restless, chanchalam, pramathi, balavat, tridham. It is very strong, impetuous, obstinate, restless, and to control the mind, it seems to me, is more difficult than to control the raging wind. So I cannot do all these things, O Krishna, whatever you have asked me now. It's impossible to control the mind. And then Krishna replies, Asanshaya Mahabhavo Manodur Nikram Chalam Abhyasena Sukonteya Vairagyena Chakrayati. Krishna says, yes, undoubtedly what you're saying is true, O Arjuna. It is very, very difficult to control the mind, but it's not impossible. It's possible. By what means? Abhyas and Vairagya. Abhyas means practice, and Vairagya means renunciation. So in pursuit of this principle, Srila Prabhupada has given us do's and don'ts, by following which we can control the mind very nicely, very easily. Abhyas, the practice includes the positives, the positive practices of Krishna consciousness, like chanting our rounds, performing Nam Sankirtan in association with devotees, hearing and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deities, taking darshan of the deities, and so on. And when it comes to Vairagya or renunciation, Srila Prabhupada has given us the four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. He's also given us many other don'ts. Don't associate with non-devotees. Don't do this, don't do that. So if we follow these do's and don'ts very strictly, then the mind can be controlled. The mind must be focused on Krishna to be controlled, just like the senses also can be controlled in the same way. When Parikshit Maharaj asked these questions to the sages at Naimisharanya about what the goal of life was, or rather what was the duty of a person about to die, and what should he think about, hear about, talk about, and worship, immediately Shukadev Goswami said, Tasmad Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi Shrotavyah Kirtitavyascha Smartavyah Chichatabhayam. He said, my dear king, a person who wants to be fearless at the time of death, and everyone is fearful at the time of death, so what must he do? He must constantly hear about, speak about, and remember the Supreme Lord Sri Hari or Sri Krishna, who is the soul of everyone's soul. In other words, remembering Krishna, thinking of Krishna, is the ultimate antidote to the restlessness of the mind. And whatever rules and regulations may be there in the scriptures, and there are hundreds and thousands of them, the essence of all these rules and regulations is Satatam smartavya Vishnu vismartavya na jatuchit sarve vidhi nishedhasyu etayor eva kinkarah. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. These are the two principles. So when the mind is focused on Krishna, then it can be controlled. So Narad Muni has said that the essential principle of Vaidhi Bhakti, which we are doing now, is yena tena prakaryena manaha Krishna niveshayet. By hook or by crook, by this way or that way, any which way, just focus the mind on Krishna. Whatever it takes to fix the mind on Krishna, do it. So that is the principle. And if you fix the mind on Krishna, then whatever else is there in the mind will have no place. It will push out. But if you don't fill your mind with Krishna, then the mind will automatically be filled in by other things, meaning by Maya. There's place either for Krishna or for Maya within our mind. And we have to choose what we want. We want Krishna or we want Maya. What does it mean when the mind is filled with Maya? That's an uncontrolled mind. And what does an uncontrolled mind think about? That's what Prabhupada is mentioning here in the purport. He says, one should not spend one's time pondering over earning money. That is a misuse of the thinking power. Big businessmen in the world, the Rockefellers and the so many others, whoever, whatever the names are, that's exactly what they're doing, isn't it? Their minds are absorbed 24 hours a day. Yena kena prakarena manaha dollars niveshaye. Somehow or other, just fix your mind on the green sign, on the green bill, the dollar bill, or the rupee, or whatever it is. Somehow or other, increase the business empire. Invest more. How can I get more? This is actually the demoniac mentality that Krishna explains in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. How one is not satisfied with what one has and one wants to just increase one's empire. Great conquerors and kings in history like Napoleon, Julius Caesar, what was their constant meditation? more. Increase the empire. Alexander the Great. Why was he called great? Because he just wanted to expand his empire. And he was successful to some degree for a short time. What about all the great, so-called great people of the world? That's all they're meditating on. Whether it's money, or whether it's power, or whether it's enjoyment of the senses. The sign of success is considered to be how much you can expand this. Expand your money power, expand your political power, expand your enjoyment. And that's what the mind is then preoccupied with all the time. Mind is absorbed in that. Day and night, they're simply dreaming of that. Eating, breathing, thinking, dollars, or power, whatever it may be that they're seeking. It's simply a dream. Like a child on the sea beach who's constructing a castle out of the sand, and then the waves come, high tide, and the father says, come on my dear boy, it's time to go, and he cries and says, no, I'm the king here, my kingdom, my castle is all gone. But the father takes him away, the waves of the sea come. So the child is living in a dream world. He's got his little castle in the sand, and he thinks that he's the king of that castle. And he's living in a world of fantasy. What is the difference between this child and all the big Rockefellers and Julius Caesars of this world? There is no difference. Prabhupada used to quote one Hindi saying that Kira Chor ya Hira Chor, Chor for Chor. Like there may be a thief who steals a little cucumber, a little vegetable, and he's caught and arrested. Or there may be a diamond thief, highly accomplished thief, very skillful, and he makes millions of dollars. And here is one small thief, but a thief is a thief. Similarly, whether it's a little child playing with his sand castle on the sea beach, or whether it's a Rockefeller or Julius Caesar, it's all the same. There's no difference between the two. They're all living in a world of dreams. A dream world that is constructed within their mind. A fantasy world. I am this, I am that, and I will increase my status within this world in this way. Srila Prabhupada narrated a funny story one time. He said there was a potter, and by the way, this story really nicely illustrates what Prabhupada is saying here. And this potter, he had two pots with him. And he was thinking, oh, yesterday I had one pot, today I have two pots. So now, I can expand my business. So he went to sleep. And in his sleep, he was dreaming. He thought he went to the market, he sold the two pots, made a good profit, and from the profit he made more pots. He made four pots, sold them, got more profit, and in this way, by selling more and more pots, he made heaps of money. He became very rich. And one day, because he was so proud of his wealth, he was thinking, oh, my wife will come, and then she may quarrel with me, and when she quarrels with me, then I will kick her. And then in his anger, in his dream, he moved his leg as if to kick. And then he kicked the two pots. And that was the end of the dream. And that was the end of his being a millionaire. And he remained a poor little potter. So, Prabhupada says here that one should not spend one's time pondering over earning money, making dreams, dreaming about this, I will have this and I will have that. There is no point. Even the highest achievement in the world is also simply a dream. I quoted that verse from Prabodhananda Saraswati, in which he says, Tridashapur Akash Pushpayate. Tridashapur refers to the heavenly planets, where Indra and the demigods live. The kind of material enjoyments that are available in the heavenly planets are beyond our imagination. Just as a person living in a remote village in India, very poor, has never seen the outside world, he's just got a little hut and he's there, is born there, he dies there, he doesn't know anything that exists beyond his village. He cannot even conceive of the way, let us say, a king would live, or a person in a very rich situation would live. Like that, residents of this earth planet cannot conceive of the kinds of enjoyment, celestial enjoyments that are possible for the denizens of the heavenly planets. We cannot imagine. But Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, Tridashapur Akash Pushpayate. It's all a wall, it's a flower in the sky, a pie in the sky. Just a dream, a fantasy. I had said earlier only half of the verse. The other half, as he says, Vishwam Pura Sukhayate Vidhi Mahindravish Kitayate. This world is full of happiness because I'm a devotee, Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying. And Vidhi, Vidhi is another name for Brahma. And Mahindra, Mahindra is another name for Lord Shiva. He says, Vidhi Mahindra Adi. Adi means etc. So all the demigods led by Indra, Brahma, Shiva and so on, Kitayate are like little insects. They become insignificant insects. And their abodes and their accomplishments also appear so insignificant. For whom? For one who has received the merciful glance of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Yat karunya kataksha vaibhavatam tam gauram evastuvam. Karunya kataksha. Kataksha means the glance, karunya means merciful. Tam gauram evastuvam. So that Gauranga Mahaprabhu, I offer my respectful obeisances to, by whose particle of a merciful glance in the heart of a devotee, vaibhavatam, who has been very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what happens? Even Indra, Brahma appear like insects, and their kingdoms and accomplishments also appear similarly trifling. The world appears blissful because of Mahaprabhu's merciful glance, and everything else seems insignificant. Impersonal Brahman is hellish, the heavenly planets are like a flower in the sky, the senses become completely harmless and they become helpful to serve Krishna. So this is the situation for a person who has obtained the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So who obtains the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Everyone who is a part of this Krishna consciousness movement, who is accepting the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Sankirtan movement, is eligible to receive that mercy. It's very easy. As Jananda Maharaj was explaining the Srimad Bhagavatam class this morning, he was talking about the importance of actually performing Naam Sankirtan in the association of devotees. This is the heart of Mahaprabhu's movement. So devotees who participate with their full heart and soul in Mahaprabhu's movement and follow the instructions given by his commander-in-chief in modern times, Srila Prabhupada, will very easily be able to rise beyond the frailties of the mind and the senses. They will be able to easily have a peaceful, controlled mind and sense which they can use in the service of Krishna. So this is the only solution. To just become followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the next quality, oh, it's already time. Okay, we'll do it anyway. So, Sukham. The next one is Sukham, which means happiness. And Dukkham, of course, means distress. So, we read from the purport. Sukham. Pleasure or happiness should always be in that which is favorable for the cultivation of the spiritual knowledge of Krishna consciousness. That's Srila Prabhupada's explanation of what real happiness should be. I repeat. Pleasure or happiness should always be in that which is favorable for the cultivation of the spiritual knowledge of Krishna consciousness. In other words, a devotee is not interested in any pleasure or happiness that is not connected with Krishna. Sometimes devotees say, well, we are supposed to work only for the pleasure of Krishna, but we get so much happiness when we are in kirtan or when we discuss philosophy. Well, experiencing spiritual pleasure is not a crime. If you are experiencing happiness doing Krishna consciousness, that's natural. It's blissful. It is a natural consequence of serving Krishna that we are automatically happy. But the point is that we should not be attached to that pleasure even. Whether the pleasure comes from chanting or hearing or not, we should continue to do it with the idea that we want to give pleasure to Krishna. That is the idea. Sometimes Krishna may give us that happiness and sometimes he may not. If we are attached only to our happiness, then we will give up Krishna consciousness when Krishna consciousness ceases to give us the happiness. But if we are attached to giving Krishna pleasure, then regardless of whether we experience pleasure or pain, then that is real Krishna consciousness. And such an attitude eventually will lead us to the point when you cannot experience pain anymore. No material pain. So what is dukkham there? And similarly, that which is painful or which causes distress is that which is unfavorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Anything favorable for the development of Krishna consciousness should be accepted and anything unfavorable should be rejected. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajanam. So if our happiness lies in these two principles, accept everything favorable for the service of Krishna, reject everything unfavorable for the service of Krishna, and that is our standard of pleasure and pain, then we are rightly situated. Prabodhananda Saraswati has already said, Vishvam Puram Sukhayate, that the world is blissful. So for a devotee, he or she is happy in hearing and chanting about Krishna and serving Krishna in so many ways. But when Prahlad was asked, Prahlad replied, Naivodvije paraturatyaya vaitaranya svadhivigayana mahamritam abna chitta shoche tato vimukha indriya chetasa indriyat bharam udvahto vibhudhan. He said, my dear Lord, I am not so much concerned about the fearful nature of this material world. I have no problem actually in this world. I am perfectly happy because my mind is completely absorbed in your glorification. My consciousness is absorbed in nectar of your glories. So I am happy for myself. But shoche tato, but I am still grieving for those people, vimukha indriya chetasa, chetasa indriya, who for the sake of petty sense enjoyment are struggling for this false happiness in this world and are inimical to you or those who have turned their back to you. And in the search for illusory happiness, they have accepted unnecessary big burdens in life. I'm feeling sorry for them. That is my only distress in life, that there are people who have not accepted the nectar of Krishna consciousness. So the devotee has only one sorrow, that other people are not in Krishna consciousness. And he has only one happiness, when others take up Krishna consciousness. So therefore you can see that book distributors and preachers and so on experience so much happiness when they see others reciprocating with Krishna through the medium of the books or the sound vibration and so on. So for a devotee, this is happiness, that's all. For ourselves as devotees, we are happy practicing our own Krishna consciousness. But the spiritual movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is meant to bring this happiness to the whole world. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll stop here, and tomorrow definitely we'll finish however much it takes. Yes, Hare Krishna. Yes. Vairagyena. Vairagya means detachment. Yes. Good question? Somebody? Yeah.
One chapter, one class, a tragical conundrum given by Radha and Maharaj. What about the raise your hand? And he said, Maharaj, I really like to enjoy the prasad. I really like to do that. And, you know, so many of us are great here. I really enjoy that. So is this bad attitude? How should I deal with that? And then Maharaj says that actually we should enjoy prasad because Krishna is happy seeing us that we are happy and we are enjoying the prasad. And also in the morning Maharaj on the Bhagavatam he mentioned a little bit about prasad. So could you please explain a little bit about this?
The question is that yes, we should, when we're taking prasadam, Krishna likes to see his devotees enjoying the prasadam. So, should we take prasadam in that spirit? Well, in one sense, yes, in another sense, no. In the sense that automatically eating Krishna prasadam gives us happiness and enjoy, and that enjoyment is what Krishna likes to see. But our approach is that it's something that is connected to Krishna. You see, the distinction has to be made between wanting to enjoy it because it's Krishna's prasadam or because it's delicious food. If it's only Mahaprasadam, if it's Krishna's prasadam, if that's really what is giving us pleasure, then why do we have a preference for rasgullas and gulab jamuns and cakes and pastries, and, right? Why don't we have preference also for the karela and the bitter things and the dal and the rice? So yeah, it's natural. Such is the nature of everything connected to Krishna that it gives us happiness. So yes, when we eat, it's not that we should be morose when we're eating. And if you see, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the devotees are always happily eating prasadam. Mahaprabhu used to always say, Haribol, loudly. And devotees would intermittently during the prasadam say Haribol to express their ecstasy at the wonderful prasadam they were eating. But the point is that we have to see that it's Krishna's prasadam. That connection to Krishna we must see. Any other point? Yes.
Yeah, Krishna, Rishikesha, the owner of the senses. So, how Krishna enjoys our senses when we eat dry bread or chapati? So, he couldn't enjoy more sense when we eat kheer? Or how is it?
The question is that Krishna is the proprietor of our senses, so when we eat dry bread, how does Krishna enjoy? Right? So the logic is that if we want Krishna to be happy, then we should eat delicious food, right? So Krishna is the master of the senses, will also enjoy the delicious food. Well, actually, you've already offered Krishna that food before. He's already eaten it, isn't it? And that's how it became prasadam.
Mm-hmm.
He already ate it. He's already enjoyed it. Because you offered it with devotion. And also, Krishna is not dependent on us for his enjoyment, right? He's in Goloka Vrindavan. He's got unlimited servants there in different mellows who are serving him and giving him unlimited enjoyment. And Krishna wants to expand even further his circle of loving devotees. And he wants to give us admission into that circle. At the same time, he is not dependent. He is pleased when he sees our efforts. That we are trying to come back to him. We are trying to come out of suffering and come back into illusion. Just like when a small child is learning how to walk, it falls, somehow struggles to rise, and the first steps give great pleasure to the parent. Even though he falls, but that struggle, although it's a struggle for the child, it may be a little painful, but the parent enjoys because, my child is making progress. So like that, Krishna said, yes, now this little soul, my part and parcel, is now making a beginning to his journey back home to me. He is understanding now that sense gratification has only bound him to this material world for unlimited lifetimes. And now he has understood what is real happiness, and he's making the first step towards that. A little stumbling, falling, some little difficulties are there, but this austerity will help him. Right? Okay, thank you very much. Yes, one last question.
Here it is explained that by abhyasa and vairagya the mind can be controlled. So, and for abhyasa there are various processes we have discussed, like Sukhdev Goswami explains that Tasmad Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishwari, hearing, chanting, remembering various verses. And Nectar of Inspection Srila Prabhupada also highlights that to control the mind one should constantly think of the lotus feet of the Lord. So which thing should be applied in which thing should highlight this importance? Controlling the mind. When the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled.
Yes, everything goes. The question is that in the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada says that one should think of the lotus feet of Krishna.
Especially mind, he says that.
Especially to control the mind, that is the best way. Yes. To think of Krishna, that's exactly what we mentioned. That the mind has to be focused somehow or the other on Krishna, on Krishna's name, on Krishna's deity form, and on everything connected with Krishna, on Krishna's service. Krishna is multifaceted. So any aspect of Krishna that we focus on will be purifying for us and help us advance in our Krishna consciousness. Okay, so thank you very much. We'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Premanande.